Good morning. I hope you're having a fine Sunday morning. Welcome to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins, and we are in the studio with a new friend and a fellow Dayton Rotarian.
Good morning, Ron.
Jerry Luggett, who is the executive director of the Dayton International Peace Museum, which we should tell people is a fairly, not just a rare local gem, it's an unusual institution in the country. I mean, there's not many peace museums or museums devoted and dedicated to the idea of peace anywhere in the United States, right? Talk about the place.
It really is. Dayton, a city of inventors, has invented a very special museum, Dayton International Peace Museum, about 11 years ago. And there are peace museums all around the world, but in the U.S. there's only one right now full-time operating organization that's a peace museum, and that's right here in downtown Dayton.
That's very cool, and it's on Monument Avenue, just near the Y Tower that people may be familiar with.
Historic Pollock House, 1865, beautiful building.
It is a beautiful house, and it looks like it's 1865 when you walk in. The woodwork is perfect, and it's a beautiful place.
Beautiful big sliding stairwell.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, now, people may be wondering, well, why is there a peace museum in Dayton that nobody else has? What's the story of the place?
Well, I think Dayton is doing a number of things that are exhibiting that it's interested in the community and positive stuff. There's, of course, the Dayton Peace Accords that took place that inspired a lot of us to see how local communities can play a role.
In the 20th anniversary of those is coming up this year. Right.
That's pretty cool. There's a Dayton Literary Peace Prize,
right.
You know.
We've had Sharon Rabb on to talk about it. Yeah.
Sure. There's around International Peace Day, there's all these events that take place. And so the Peace Museum really is, we call it a space for peace, but started by a local school teacher and farmer.
Oh.
And it almost starts off telling the story like a joke. A farmer and a school teacher got off a plane from the United Nations event. But Chris Dahl, the school teacher, said to her husband, Ralph, wouldn't it be great if there was, right here in Dayton, a space for peace where school children and all of us could learn the simple idea, powerful idea, really, nonviolence works.
That's very cool. So what will people see at the museum when they go? It's not a huge building, but there's plenty to see. You can spend some time there.
About 4,000 square feet. They'll see some beautiful flowers this time of year. We're peaceful. And
that's
as
nice.
You enter and come to the first space, it's called Peace Station. And hopefully they'll smell some coffee, maybe get a little sample of wine and chocolate. And I think what they'll see are people to greet them, to sort of engage with them around that question, what does a more peaceful world look like for you? So good conversation. But then we have exhibits. And our first exhibit that's going on right now, people will see, is on the Peace Corps. 54 years of the Peace Corps experience.
And recently you had Ambassador Tony Hall in to talk about that. That was back in January, was that?
Yeah, we've got that special picture of Tony Hall in the Peace Station. But he was at an event which we wanted to honor him for his work in so many areas of peace and a more just world. We wanted to do that because he's been so important here locally and because he's done so much about world hunger. And also because his connection with the Peace Corps.
Right.
He was a Peace Corps volunteer in
Thailand. Yeah, which I'd forgotten. I'd forgotten where he was. I had the very fortunate opportunity to interview him for the Dayton Daily News while he was in the lobby of the in one of your coffee room at the Peace Museum.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our listeners probably know Tony Hall, but for those who don't, he's a former U.S. representative from Dayton, and was then the ambassador to the United Nations Hunger Mission.
World Food Program. In Rome?
Based in Rome, for almost 7 or 8 years through two different administrations.
Yeah.
Clinton and Bush, I think. And pushing the idea of the UN effort to solve hunger throughout the world. And it's become his thing. And very much interconnected into the work of the Peace Museum.
Yeah.
You have another big event coming up, though. I mean, you have on May 2nd, right?
The Peace Heroes Walk.
Excellent. Tell us about the Peace Heroes Walk.
It's another invention that comes out of Dayton.
We love Dayton inventions.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And the idea is how do you lift up people, ordinary people, who accept risk and they somehow succeed in making the world a less violent, sort of a more just place. And these are ordinary people like Ted Studebaker or Sister Dorothy Stang. We all know about Sister Stang's amazing work, or Mama Nozipo Glenn. I mean, there's lots of local folks, Margaret Peters, who we're going to lift up and just let children and youth and all of us be reminded, despite some things we're troubled about, distressed, there's these people who are doing very positive things.
And how do you define a peace hero? It's an idea that the museum really promotes as kind of a way to get your message out. It's in a lot of your marketing and a lot of the writing that you do.
It's an ancient idea. It comes out of Socrates.
I missed the boat then. I thought
it's an ancient idea, but in today's world, what we wanted to do was just remind ourselves that if science is right, and most of the times it is, science says nonviolence works best, then we should, in addition to honoring our soldiers and folks who work hard to make sure the world is safe, we should honor people who are using the best science, which is nonviolence works. And so a peace hero, we say, is an ordinary, often anyway, an ordinary person who accepts risk and succeeds in making the world a less violent and more just place.
So that's an interesting idea. I mean, and we'll get back to the particulars of the walk in a little bit, but I think you've kind of touched on an interesting idea there that is probably worth examining a little bit more. The way you phrased that, with having risk at the heart of that, it acknowledges maybe what is obvious, but is often part of the discussion of peace, which is non-peace. You know, I mean, the peace, it's like good and evil, black and white, warm and cold. It exists in opposition to violence and to the idea of non-peace. And for you, a peace hero is somebody who more than acknowledges that, but kind of engages that, takes that on.
Yeah.
Takes on the possibility of not having peace and goes, what, further and past that? Or talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I see myself violence as force on a continuum. And, you know, you have the violence we see in the world today that makes us all crazy. You see ISIS and the things that happen around that type of violence. And, you know, that's just something I don't think very many people in the world would want. Maybe a psychopath. Maybe, you know, there's a very small percentage. But then you have a kind of a nonviolence, almost nonviolence is what Gandhi spoke of. Almost nonviolence is a very interesting idea. Gandhi said that if a woman was in danger of being, you know, raped or maimed, and she protected herself and used violence and you know, hurt her attacker or worse, he considered that to be a moral act. He considered almost nonviolence to be on that continuum as nonviolence. And then, of course, you know, what the museum wants to have us lift up and learn about is how you get skillful in the world, how nations get skillful in looking at the science of nonviolence and saying, so what can we do to create a world where nonviolence is what we use, because it always gets the best outcomes, or at least most of the time. Mm-hmm. Not all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, not all the time.
Then why do you think it doesn't happen more often?
Well, I think we have a myth that we live with, that violence...
I think we have lots of myths that we live with.
They're very well said.
We may be having one right now.
Exactly.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. A myth we live with about... why doesn't it happen more often?
Well, I think we all live or grow up often with the idea that violence works best.
Or that might makes right, that idea. Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah.
And well, might makes right, but nonviolence is mighty powerful when it's used skillfully. Mm-hmm. So I think that we teach our children this, and we see this on TV. How many movies do you see where there's a hero like Ted Studebaker, this person that we're celebrating from West Milton, who, you know, went to Vietnam during that era with a shovel and with a guitar. Mm-hmm. And his life did end up, had a violent ending, but not of his own choosing. He went there courageously and tried to do some things. So I think we're seeing more and more as we learn about what the best science is and as we educate ourselves about it, change happens. And I think that's why the Peace Museum is so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, Orville and Wilbur Wright looked up in the sky and they saw a bird. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, we could build something that could do that if we would just look at the science.
Sure.
And there was risk and there was lots of work and people laughed at them probably at some point.
It's documented that they did, yes. Yeah.
But still, they pushed through with the best science and they did it. The best science today in the world says, in many cases, the majority of the cases, nonviolence works best. So one of these days, the Peace Hero Walk, getting back to that, is all about saying, hey, let's not only honor people that are doing these courageous things that use what I would call almost nonviolence, but let's honor especially too the ones that are practicing the best science, nonviolence works.
What does it say about society or our history or the way people think, though, that to follow your I think your good analogy with the Wright brothers, if, as you know from their story, it was the War Department that actually figured out how to use their plane first. You know, I mean, the French were curious about it for because they saw war clouds coming with Germany, and the U.S. Signal Corps, I guess it was, I think the Army Signal Corps was the military was the ones that first figured out how to take this invention that was born in peace, as you put it very well, and yet they. Nobody understood what are we going to do with an airplane until the Army came and said, we know what we're going to do with it. We're going to use it to drop bombs. And I don't know, that wasn't the initial idea. I think they were initially using it for reconnaissance, on the battlefield. What's that, carry your analogy a little further. What does that say about us as people and as society that an idea born in peace ends up having its first application as a military thing? Is that just the way we work?
I say it's evolution. I'd say that the Peace Museum wants to be this only peace museum in the U.S., wants to be part of a process of rebranding the peace movement. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, we do not want to divide and conquer when it comes to the military. Why is it that our primary person traveling around right now, Dayton, who comes regularly, is Captain Paul Chappelle, who went to West Point, who understands...
Yeah, tell us about him. You mentioned him to me before.
He understands military strategy. He was in... Iraq. Mm-hmm. He knows the tactics that can work, that sometimes must work, but more importantly, he believes that nonviolence works best, and he doesn't see that it's a contest between the soldier and the peacenik. It's a matter of knowing that if nonviolence works best, how can all of us, including the military, put our primary emphasis on the best science. When it comes to ISIS, for example, all that stuff happening, you know, it looks like at first glance the only thing you can do is react with vengeance. Mm-hmm. But one of the characteristics of a peace hero that Paul points out, Captain Chappelle points out, is a peace hero is someone who rejects vengeance. Mm-hmm. Think about it. If Malala, after this Nobel Peace Prize winner, 17 years old, who says that the most powerful force in the universe is a girl with a book, if after she got shot in the head, she said, let's kill them all, she wouldn't be Malala. Mm. If Dr. Martin Luther King went out and started flipping off white people, and that's what you had a picture of, he wouldn't be Dr. Martin Luther King. And so vengeance doesn't work. It doesn't matter whether you're military, a soldier, or whatever. Vengeance doesn't work. Mm. So that's an important characteristic.
And there's a difference between being angry and being vengeful. I mean, obviously, King had a lot to be mad about. Malala had a lot to be unhappy about, but they sublimated it into something more acceptable, more socially proper.
John and Bev Titus, who are part of the museum's life, their daughter was tragically killed on that plane that flew into the Pentagon. Mm. They stood before the media.
And they're from Miami County, right?
And they're from Miami County, yeah. Urbana, actually. Mm. They said, John said, when asked, don't you want to go out there and, you know, get them all? John said, not in our daughter's name. Do we want more innocents to be killed? Yes, we want justice. We want, and yes, of course, they were mad and angry and outraged and all that stuff. But the difference, the fine line is violence begets more violence. Violence doesn't help. That doesn't mean, again, that there's not a place for a force for a response. Mm-hmm. I would never say that, and I'm the director of the Peace Museum, okay?
Sure.
I care about peace. But what we can say is that vengeance or that kind of response simply doesn't work.
Right.
And we know it because we've seen it firsthand.
Sure, sure. We should tell people what they're listening to if they're just tuning in. This is Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins. And we are in the studio today with Jerry Luggett, who is the executive director of the Dayton International Peace Museum. They have an event, one of their big fundraising and engagement events of the year, coming up May 2nd, the 2015 Peace Heroes Walk, which is at Riverscape Metro Park, right?
Right.
Excellent. Starting, I've got the poster here. It starts at 9 o'clock, registration at 8, and they can go. You can go to peaceheroeswalk.org for info and to sign up. Talk about your own background a little bit. How long have you been? I mean, I'm asking the question I know the answer to, but how long? You're fairly new to the job. How long have you been in your position, and how did you get here?
Well, I just finished my first year, and I came.
Congratulations!
Thank you very much.
We're happy to have you.
Yeah,
and you're the first. You're the first full-time director for the museum, right? It went
exactly.
As a purely volunteer effort for many years.
Exactly.
Right.
Came here from Hawaii Island.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was working as a mental health professional, supervising crisis workers on the island, dealing with kids that were and families that were in distress.
Mm-hmm.
So, my background really is working in a variety of ways with at-risk, vulnerable populations, and caring a lot about how the arts, music, and visual arts can help us think more deeply. Or in other ways about the importance of making a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fun journey. I did many years of being on the road doing music. Traveled all around the U.S. in that capacity.
Now talk about that a little bit. You've talked a little bit with me before about kind of a peace journey that you took that was kind of unusual. I mean, I don't think most people have done anything quite like it. And you documented a little bit. On the Peace Museum website, and involved an unusual vehicle, as I recall. What was tell us about that trip? How long that went on for a while, right?
Okay, I'm not a hippie. Right?
I did not accuse you of that.
But it was called the Peace Bubble, and it was a beautiful, state of the art, teardrop style, kind of travel trailer, and we equipped it to do music and to be sort of a listening post. Mm-hmm. We did 7,000 video interviews with people in 45 states.
You, as part of a team, was
my spouse
and wife?
And I, okay, yeah. Patsy Farrell, photographer, and a therapist working. She spent most of her life working with returning combat vets.
Oh,
PTSD,
my goodness, that's fascinating work.
And so forth. And so what we wanted to do was interview people out as part of the music events, interview people asking the question, the same question, what does a more peaceful world look like for you? And
how many people did you ask this of?
We interviewed on cameras. I have 7,000 video interviews of people answering that question.
What did you do with them all? Do they exist somewhere where people
I've
can
got
see
them? I've still got the majority of them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not, I had a $300 Sony camera.
Sure,
it's not
sure.
HD or any of that stuff.
That's right.
But there are still many that appear, if you go to Peace Bubble, YouTube, Peace Bubble, you'll see them.
Okay. How did people, assuming most people took that question seriously, but what were some of the responses that you recall that stood out for you?
Well,
because it's an interesting question. It puts it into the personal, but it also, the way you asked it, it allows people to kind of imagine, well, John Lennon, kind of to expansively imagine possibilities instead of the way you might have asked the question.
Yeah.
What were some of the responses you got that stuck with you?
Well, I remember one day I put the microphone in front of a woman. I was at a Martin Luther King walk, and I said, tell me your name and where you're from. And the woman said, my name is Janet Napolitano. I'm the governor of Arizona.
Really?
And I still have this interview saved, who, of course, later became the director of Homeland Security and now is in California with the university system. But she talked about the importance of educating children and that was vitally important to anything else that would create a more peaceful, just society.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. A lot of people were, I wouldn't say skeptical, but just lamenting, oh, if only this could happen. But they really saw a lot of the troubles in the world and wondered how we would get there.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk more with people on the level of if you could imagine, just imagine for a moment, suspend that other stuff, then you got some interesting comments about what they would like the world to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And a common theme was just you know, why can't we all get along? It seems like we have so much more in common than we have that divides us. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I still see that when I talk with people, most people believe we have more in common than we have than that which divides us. And it's really a few people. Look at any situation in the world, it seems like, and you've got these groups on both ends that are controlling what happens, and people in the middle, you know, want more peace. Mm-hmm. So,
do you, I mean, since this is your business and you've been watching this for a while, you mentioned evolution a while ago. Do you think things are getting better over time on this subject? And if so, why?
Well, I do. I think that I think there is actually overall, I think, less reported incidents of violence. We talked about this when we talked about America's gun culture.
Yeah.
It seems counterintuitive because we see these things that happen and there's, you know, they're so outrageous. But really, I think things are improving. I mean, you look at women's rights 200 years ago and what we have now, or again, Captain Paul Chappelle talks about
20 years ago versus what we have now.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think you and I have talked a little bit about the book by Steven Pinker from Harvard. It came out a few years ago.
On Killing.
It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a doorstop of a book. It's like 900 pages.
Yeah.
It came out a few years ago, and it's a really good book that, I mean, I enjoyed it, where he's a sociologist. He makes the case that while, and I say this as a member of the media, while the media puts out this portrayal of that makes a lot of people feel like there's more violence in the world, he says that just categorically, by any statistical measure of any kind of violence, there's less. Even with the exception of some places around the world that you would consider hotspots, which are the places that we report on, ISIS and stuff like that, that for the most part around the world, every category of violence has been going down for 50 years. And he cites World War II as the point at which it started. Yeah. It was the peak of everything being horrible.
Yeah.
And that since then it's going down. And he talks about women's rights, the rise of women in society being a thing, and the fact that governments actually nowadays try to engage one another without using violence or war as the first response, diplomacy and stuff like that,
sure.
And sanctions and things. And it's a remarkable book. While you're reading it, it's almost hard to swallow. It's like, could it really be as not bad as he's saying? Because you're so used to this idea of violence pervading our entertainment and our the news and all that stuff.
Well, when you ask about the question about being on this journey, this peace journey, one of the things we want to do is collect the missing stories. Mm-hmm. The missing stories are the people who we don't get to hear from. And they're the people, like, for example, when I was at a homicide vigil, mm-hmm. to kind of tie this together, I was at a homicide vigil not too long ago where a mother was talking about what it meant to hear her son talk about having really no hope for a more peaceful future. And I mean, I think for the Peace Museum standpoint, how do we listen to all those people who still live in a kind of violence that just pervades their life,
right.
And a poverty and a social injustice? How does the Peace Museum lift up the missing stories in a way that doesn't dishonor the beauty of the world, that doesn't invite people to go see the Dayton Art Institute and enjoy the beauty or go out and walk along the river here, but how do we still not miss the point that there are people whose lives are not very peaceful, and it's a matter of, again, these peace heroes and others who can sort of make things better, help us remember how we can make things better.
Mm-hmm. And what can people do, what do you recommend people do in their own personal lives on a daily basis to engage on these ideas?
That's a really great question. I think, notice who and what is right in front of you. And take a moment.
The Mother Teresa thing, yeah.
Yeah, just notice what is right in front of you. And then notice what you can do. Don't become overwhelmed by what you can't do. Yesterday, I was downtown at the Peace Museum, and a young man came up to me. He just said he just got out of jail. He'd been out of jail a few hours. He needed some socks, you know, and he needed some food. Mm-hmm. And so I went, and I didn't have the time, but I took the time, ran home, got a pair of socks, and ran to the museum and gave him some food. Some would say that's naive, but I was thinking to myself, no, that was what was right in front of me, and say what you want, but you know.
That was karma. I mean, to have thrown somebody out of the Peace Museum who needed help would have been, not what you're there for, right?
Yeah. I think one of the most important things any of us can do is educate ourselves about what makes for peace in the world, and not dumb down the message of peace. Mm-hmm. Don't settle for easy answers, and don't allow yourself to be to read one news source. Don't only read the Dayton Daily News. You know,
oh, come on.
Even though I do read it every day.
No, you should. Engaged people should read lots and lots and lots of different news sources. Absolutely.
And I
totally subscribe to that.
The world is not made up of atoms. The world is made up of stories. So listen to the stories.
That's an interesting point. So we have a couple minutes left, so we should tell people again. There was another event that's coming up after the Peace Walk that you wanted to make sure
we this afternoon.
Oh, that's right. Before the Peace Walk, this afternoon. Today's Sunday, right?
An opening of the Ted Studebaker exhibit that we are so excited about.
Excellent.
Ted Studebaker. It's at the museum. It starts at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
And Ted Studebaker was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And Deb Hogshead has created this amazing exhibit. And there'll be lots of good things happening at that time. Then we'll be honoring him along with nearly 60 peace heroes the following Saturday at 9 a.m. Registration starts at 8 at Riverscape.
And to find out more, people can always go to
www.peaceheroeswalk.org, or better yet, go to DaytonPeaceMuseum.org.
Gotcha. Excellent. Just a few seconds left. What do you like best about your job?
What I like best about my job is being downtown Dayton. Lots of interesting things happening.
That's not what I expected you to say, but that's really a good answer.
It is. Yeah. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, there's a lot going on downtown. And we end up talking about downtown a lot on this show, and I'm not sure if it's, not sure why. We are close to downtown, and I like downtown. But it's a good place to be lately. Yeah. How many people signed up for the Peace Walk yet? Do you know?
Yes, we have 60 teams. That represents probably 300 to 400 walkers. I imagine we might hit 500 or 600 walkers in
one
day.
Is this the first one?
This is the first Peace Heroes Walk.
Excellent, cool. So you'll get a chance to do more.
Yeah, and Neil Gittleman will be there as our MC, so we're pretty excited about that.
I've always thought about having Neil on this show. I should. I just saw him perform last weekend with the, he was leading the orchestra for the opera. Dayton Opera, the Pearl Fishers by Bizet, and it was a wonderful show. And it's always good to see Neil doing his thing.
And for music lovers, Michael and Sandy Bashaw and I will be doing, and Puzzle of Light will be doing an event on June 7th at the Neon at 3 o'clock to celebrate what happens on
that's cool.
At the walk.
That's very cool. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
This has been Jerry Leggett, the executive director of the Dayton Peace Museum. And to learn more, go to their website or engage in the Peace Heroes Walk on May 2nd. And this has been Miami Valley Voices. We'll see you next week.